Hello, my name is Nathan Smith. I'm a voter from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I'm no longer going to be a voter from here on out.
Nathan is 33 years old.
What I see is a decision between a side that does nothing and a side that does bad things. It's just like, you know, you get your choice between an old senile white guy or an old senile white guy who really, really wants to nuke somebody. And it just scares me, you know?
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and Nathan has good company. According to a recent NPR Marist poll, more than 70% of registered voters ages 30 to 41 do not plan to vote in the upcoming midterms. For voters aged 18 to 29, the number of those bowing out is even higher. And you told us why.
Hi, my name is Mo Carnage. I'm in Louisa County, Virginia. I guess I'm relatively young, 36, and I don't vote because Democrats and Republicans both represent corporate neoliberal interests. They do not represent average working class people, and they are both right-wing parties.
Yeah, hi, this is Troy, and I'm calling from Omaha, Nebraska. I am 30. All of the candidates either lean too far left or too far right. Nobody is in the middle of the road using common sense. Everyone is either a fascist or a communist. I can't take it.
Why I don't feel compelled to vote is because I feel like the current democratic system doesn't serve me or people who look like me or people even adjacent to me. The way things are going are very indicative of things being smoothed over without any real tangible problem solving. And progress in ways that are like very important for those who have been underserved for so long.
Hi, this is Victor Manasian. There is both a culture to get people to vote, but at the same time, there's a culture that is saying, no, don't vote, leave it up to your elders. As a result, many don't take the risk. Or they don't have the time to.
This is Mike from Fullerton. I'm 35 now, and I'm just becoming cynical in my old age, and there's just too much to read on to vote intelligently. I don't want to take the time to read. And just as it's a freedom, it's our right to vote, it's also our right not to vote. And that's something that we also need to cherish, not voting.
Mike, as someone who's a little bit older than 35. It's not old age. 35 is not old age. So don't get drowned down in that cynicism. Now, while I appreciate all the reasons that many of you called in to share with us, I also have to say, as imperfect as it is, our democratic system of voting is what we've got. So how do young Americans expect their voices to be heard in politics if they don't show up at the ballot box? What would motivate them? What would motivate you to vote? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. And we've got a terrific group of young people to help walk us through this. Fana Haile Selassie joins us from Washington. She's a 23-year-old graduate student from Durham, North Carolina, and she's at Georgetown University now. Fana, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so first of all, do you plan to vote in the midterms?
I do plan to vote in the midterms.
Okay, good. So we've got someone who's bucking that 70%+ trend here. Hang on, Fana, because I want to now also bring in Tennessee Buckman from New Jersey. He's 33-year-old, he's a makeup artist. And Tennessee, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you for having me, Meghna.
And what do you think? Are you going to vote in the midterms?
I'm on the fence, Meghna.
On the fence. Tell me why.
I just don't see myself being represented through both parties.
Okay, so tell me more. What about you, or what do you mean by not feeling seeing yourself represented?
I am a black gay man who is also an immigrant from West Africa, and I feel that even though there are a lot of points being given towards all my categories, I don't see like my age being represented in that. I don't feel like my I don't see a lot of people my age really in office that I can say I can relate to that person and I can see them speaking to me clear as day. It's hard to see myself represented in that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying because, I mean, as we know, obviously in the presidency, but also in the House and the Senate, the average age of lawmakers in the United States is definitely more than 33, right? Which is your 33, Tennessee. But Fana, so you're a passionate and regular and very engaged voter. Tell me about why this is so important to you. And then I would love to hear both sort of you and Tennessee kind of talk with each other about your approaches to, you know, this democracy of ours.
Mm-hmm. Well, I completely understand where Tennessee is coming from as someone who also has roots in Africa and many friends who are first-generation immigrants. We don't see people who look like us that are being represented, particularly in North Carolina, though, in Georgia. And in Georgia, I think representation is one of the things motivating me this election. We have women of color running in unprecedented positions in both states, Sherry Beasley for Senate in North Carolina and my Spelman sister, Stacey Abrams, in Georgia. So that's the first thing that's motivating me. And as you mentioned, I'm from Durham, North Carolina. It's a thriving cosmopolitan pocket of North Carolina with a rich history of Black entrepreneurship and political activism. But unfortunately, that legacy is being destroyed by rampant gun violence and corporate displacement, which is why I'm more excited than ever to vote in this election and more hopeful, though hesitant, about the policies on the table and what's at stake, because my family home and my family safety are at stake for me.
Hmm. Well, you heard Tennessee talk about, though, not being able to relate to the candidates that are on the ballot in front of him, even as some of those candidates may talk about people who identify as Tennessee does. Doesn't necessarily feel like there's an authenticity there, which, you know, quite frankly, I understand, because we want our representatives to actually represent us. I mean, talk to Tennessee. Tell me what you think about that.
I think it boils down to legacy. You know, why are some of us motivated to vote and others aren't? I think it might be free to vote, but it's expensive to dream. And unfortunately, the American dream has been limited to one racial and socioeconomic demographic. And part of that dream is the realization of political representation and service. And if you have a large component of a community, for me, it's young Black voters who have not been able to realize the tangible benefits of political awareness and involvement, then that legacy is tainted. There's no personal connection and motivation to vote and participate. And then when you consider that legacy alongside recent attempts to suppress voters' rights in states like Georgia and Florida and Iowa, the incentive just isn't there. Like I said, I'm voting because it's literally life or death with the gun violence.
Tennessee, what do you think about that? Go ahead and feel free to talk with Fana. I just want to listen to how the two of you engage with this.
So I definitely hear when you speak on legacy, and for me, I have to say, growing up in New Jersey growing up in New Jersey and not being able to really see these politicians come to like an inner city school that I went to, like Trenton Central High School, and not actually like teaching us the proper ways to actually, you know, vote and see how we can actually be part of the system and actually grow with our senators and congressmen and also our presidents. I don't really see again that representation clearly. It's very telling of what they want. They don't come to the schools and speak to us. So how am I going to grow up and now as an adult, see a senator as someone on my side. You know, as much as I do respect Cory Booker and Robert Menendez, I don't think that they, you know, that there were a lot of people back then actually taking their time to give us that breeding, that knowledge, so we can go forward and actually be, you know, like, you know, functioning members of democracy.
Mm. So, Tanisi, when I talk to friends who are also on the fence, like yourself, I just get the sense that they're wholly dissatisfied and disillusioned with the political machinery of the U.S., and rightfully so, if you've been on the margins of that system for years and years on end. But what I've noticed amongst peers who have outright rejected voting altogether and refused to participate in elections is a shift to alternative forms of activism. And I think that's important because there's still a strong activist ethos represented in, you know, communities that have been on the margins, even if they're not voting. And I think that activist instinct has just shifted to other dimensions and other instruments other than electoral politics because they've had to. Do you see yourself participating in any of those alternate forms of activism, whether it's you know, conversations, community groups? I'm more curious about what those alternative forms of activism look like.
Well, I'm actually going to let Tanisi answer that question when we come back from a quick break here. We're listening to young voters in America about why they will or they won't, or they're on the fence about voting in these midterms, because young Americans, definitely between the ages of 18 and 29, and even between the ages of 30 or, yeah, I can't do my math today, 30 and 40, are very unlikely to vote, according to a recent NPR poll. So we'll hear more when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're listening to young voters about why they will, won't, or aren't sure if they're going to be voting in the midterm elections. And the reason why is because an NPR poll, an NPR Marist poll, recently found that more than 70% of young people above the ages of 18, I guess that would be the voting age, 18 and 40, say they might not vote in the midterms. So I'm joined today by Fana Haile Selassie. She's 23 and she's with us from Washington. Tanisi Buckman joins us as well. He's 33 and joins us from New Jersey. And Tanisi, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to the question that Fana asked about, if not voting, then other ways of that you feel like you are being active or an activist in your life.
Honestly, I have to say, as a makeup artist and an independent contractor, I don't really have that luxury of time to actually find these outlets to and communities to connect with. But in my seat and with my clients, I do have a moment to have conversations with them and talk to them about how they view the political atmosphere. And also I do ask them, like, you know, are they voting? Are they aware of current events? And I'm going to tell you, like, most of them are not. And they're really, and so my conversations tend to really, I tend to sway them into considering being more active in politics and just watching, listening to the news and taking time to be aware of what's happening. So I do find myself being that activist for them. And they are people who are kind of lost in that, you know, in that digital atmosphere where they're distracted by everything that they see. So when it comes to politics, that's a quick swipe. They don't see it. They don't want to see it. It's depressing. So that's really, I feel like I'm doing the work for them. But again, I'm having conversations with people who don't care to listen.
Yeah. So can I just jump in here for a second? Because, you know, I think it's helpful to understand a little bit about, in every case, for every person that gives us the gift of being on this show, about understanding a little bit more about where they, their own journey that led them to this moment. And Tanisi, you told our producer, Dory, who put this show together, that, I mean, you obviously know about this from firsthand experience as a young Liberian refugee escaping the war there, about the very sharp edge of politics, right? But I also understand that in terms of what you see in politics here in the United States, at least at the national level, it wasn't just that you don't see anyone that you can relate to, but you have a deeper criticism of the parties. You started out thinking that you were a Democrat, but maybe not anymore?
Yeah, I'm not, I can't see a party like the Democrats, there is a lot of overselling and a lot of pulling so many different people into their wings, and I just feel that they're overdoing it, and it's starting to become just a faint noise now. I don't see the Democratic Party as really a party of the people anymore. It's honestly just becoming more self-interested, because they just tend to keep pitching so many there's so many elevator pitches that to me it's like, when is actually something going to follow through? Like, when are we actually going to see, you know? And I understand there's a lot of red tape, bureaucracy is a thing, and there's a lot of, you know, things that have to be a lot of regulations that they can't just say, let's just make a change because people need the change. But I just feel like if you keep pitching and keep selling us these, and I'm just going to be blunt, like, it just sounds like lies now after a while, because I'm not seeing a lot of change, really. Sorry.
No. I was just going to there's another guest I want to bring in, but Fun, I'd really love to hear your thoughts on what Tanisi just said, though.
Yeah, Tanisi, your Liberian background has been brought up, and I think I can understand where you're coming from, because I study foreign policy, and we emphasize all the time, we want to cast a critical lens on Africa's politics and emphasize free and fair elections. But when we look at our own country and the landscape of electoral rights here, and how many members of the Black and Brown community are constantly being rejected from the right to vote, the question is twofold, in that it's not just, is it worth voting, but can I even do it when I get there? And take myself, for example, in Georgia, I was purged from the voter registration system in 2020. So I think these obstacles, though they're systemic, you know, there's power in discourse, and you shouldn't underestimate your role in conducting conversations from your position. And I think your initial point about time and how time is ultimately a luxury that many of us don't have goes back to the point about, it might be free to vote, but it's expensive to dream. And far too many of us have lost hope and lost and are just disillusioned with the American dream and promise.
Well, you know, this idea that the parties have promised a lot but delivered very little is something that came through loud and clear in folks who called us over the past week about why they're not voting. I mean, for example, this is Jarrett Wesley, who called us from Canton, Massachusetts.
The question was about whether I'd be voting in the midterms this year. My answer is no. Mostly it's because I feel like the issues that matter the most to me are issues that I think should matter to everyone. Mostly, the water that we drink and the foods that we eat. I mean, I'm really thinking about like PFAS and the kind of chemicals that get into our food and our water and, you know, things of that nature that I think really affect everyone. And it's concerning to me that there aren't a lot of like solutions proposed by either party.
That's Jarrett from Canton, Massachusetts. And here's Randy Potter, 31 years old, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And as someone my age, some of the economic issues that I feel I'm affected by, I don't feel are particularly addressed in the current legislature, given that most of the representatives are far older than me and do not feel in any way related to my economic reality, as many of them are in a completely different class of wealth, and I'm sure have no real appreciation for what it's like for people, for example, strapped with student debt or struggling to pay for health care, things of that nature.
That's Randy Potter, 31, from Pittsburgh. On the other hand, Teo Tezcan, he's 20 years old and a college student in Berkeley, California. And in the 2020 election, Teo voted for the Green Party. And he says, you don't like the Democratic or Republican candidate on the ballot? Fine. But that's not a good enough reason not to vote.
I could have just marked no one, and there were so many other things to vote for. People who say that, I hope you've actually gone and looked at the thing that you used to vote, because that's just the president thing is just some tiny little thing. Like this midterm is a great example. Why are we having an election when there's no president to elect? Because there's so much other stuff to decide on. And this is how democracy works.
That's Teo Tezcan, 20 years old in Berkeley, California. Well, Fana and Tanisi, hang on here for just a second, because Troy Simpson has been patiently listening along. He lives in Omaha, Nebraska. He's 30 years old, a veteran of the United States Navy. Troy, welcome to you.
Thank you, Magna. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. What's your plans for voting in the midterms?
I'm probably not going to vote this year.
And why is that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's I can't find a sensible candidate on the ballot. In order to win your primary these days, you got to pander to the extremes of your party, and that's how you get on the ballot. And I can't forget, you can't unsay the things that they said during their primary races, and I don't hold with either side of that. I would really love to see a third party candidate or somebody who has just a smidgen of common sense on the ballot these days.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're the one, we heard your voice a little bit earlier at the top of the show when we had that montage of callers, because you said that you felt like everyone was either a fascist or a communist on the ballot, essentially, right?
Pretty much. That's about the way it goes. Coming from Nebraska, I grew up on a farm. I'm German, Irish, Italian, and Indian, Native American. So I kind of had a hodgepodge growing up. And the thing that stuck with me the most was something my grandfather told me. And he was like, look, the buffalo are gone. They're not giving the land back. But you live in America, and you can be anything you want to be. Nobody said it was going to be easy. So I hear a lot of folks saying, oh, they don't look like me, or, oh, you know, they don't have the same viewpoints that I do. Well, looks don't matter. And assigning the view to somebody based on their sex or their color or their race or their religion, frankly, flies in the face of what this union was founded upon. Mm-hmm. It should be based upon their viewpoints. Instead, we have two parties, one that says, hey, we're not them, so vote for us. And the other one that says, they're not us, don't vote for them. And nobody's talking common sense. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, here's what matters, here's what doesn't.
You know, I wonder, though, I mean, I'm right there with you, Troy, about really, in a sense, what we do has to be the best measure of us. But I keep coming back to this thought that, like, look, our democratic system, imperfect as it is, it's what we've got. We happen to have a system where, you know, it's not the person who gets the majority of the votes from all the entire electorate. It's the person who gets the majority of the votes of the people who show up, right? So we're also trending in a direction where, you know, folks are getting elected to local, state, and national office, having won a smaller and smaller percentage of the actual vote. So what other option is there, though? Like, when you sit out, how are you gonna get more how are you going to advance the work of getting someone who's on the ballot who's more to the center, as you're talking about, Troy?
Well, one of the things I think we should do is eliminate the corporate funding or corporate finance of campaigns, because I think that much money just muddies the water. I mean, I'll give you an example. Here in Nebraska, we've got two congressmen who are running for re-election, or one's running for re-election, a guy named Don Bacon, he's a Republican, and the other guy is Vargas, who's a state legislator, the Democrat. But, you know, Don Bacon is, frankly, what I would call a carpetbagger. The guy's not from Nebraska. I don't think he could tell you a bale of hay from a bale of straw or alfalfa field from a Milo field. He's not from Nebraska. He was chosen by the Republican Party as somebody they thought would be electable. And Vargas, I don't think he could find his way out of Omaha if he didn't have an iPhone and Interstate 80. So there's a whole lot more to the state they're going to represent, but they don't bother with that because that's not where the money is.
Hmm. Fauna, I heard you there earlier. I'm guessing you definitely have a response to this.
Mm-hmm. I wholeheartedly agree with Troy and appreciate his points. I go back to my primary interests this election, which are safety for my family and displacement, gentrification in my hometown. And all of that ties back to corporate interests. And it, if you follow the trail of money, it connects with the political system. And I don't think that's sustainable. And in turn, it's just turning off voters like Troy and others. And so I think he's spot on, and I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. So, Tennessee, what do you think?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with Troy when it comes to the super PACs and the amount of money that's being put into these races. I just feel that there should, if you're raising money from donations that are from the people that are voting, that's fair. But if you're getting money from corporations that are trying to just back their own personal interests, then I don't think you see the people in that person anymore. You're just seeing a party being led by the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to like trace the line here of thinking, and because I want to figure out like what do we do about this. The sort of corporate capture of American politics is real, especially as we have, you know, election after election with even like state level races going above tens and hundreds of millions of dollars being spent. But it was lawmakers who were voted into office who actually themselves created the environment in which we could have that corporate capture, right? Because mm-hmm. then those same lawmakers and presidents put people on the Supreme Court, in which Citizens United was decided. So I just point that out because, again, it's like, you know, Troy, is there any way out of this catch-22 that you see that that young people could actually, you know, move the needle? What about, even if it's against the odds, trying to get more young people to run? So that mm-hmm. you are seeing folks like that, Troy, that can actually make the kind of changes that you're hoping for show up on the ballot. What do you think?
So a couple of things. Being a Nebraskan, William Jennings Bryan comes to mind. He unsuccessfully ran for the presidency a couple of times in the early part of the 20th century. But a lot of his ideas that they had in their party were later on incorporated by the two parties. I really think we need a third party of common sense that incorporates some ideas from both sides. Because, you know, when I was in the Navy, I was exposed to a lot of different people from a lot of different places, and I saw a lot of different things. And I can tell you, it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican sitting in the White House, you're still going on deployment to the Middle East. But if we had some folks with, we like to say that are fiscally conservative and socially liberal, you know, get some spending under control, control the inflation. I mean, what we're dealing with right now is a direct result of the payments that were given out, you know, for the COVID relief funds. You know, you start giving away free money and prices go up, and everybody said it was going to happen. And everybody in government's like, oh, no, it won't. But here we are. So where's the common sense? And I think if we formed a third party and got some decent candidates who would ascribe to that common sense of, you know, standard American middle class values, I think you could get somewhere.
Well, this hour, we're listening to younger Americans, younger voters, about why they aren't voting, why they're on the fence about voting, or why they are. And the reason is that there's this recent NPR Marist poll that said more than 70% of voters between the ages of 18 and 40 don't plan on casting a ballot in the midterms. Now, when we come back, we're actually going to check that hypothesis a little bit, because the trends in the past several elections show that when it does come time to actually cast that ballot, young people do show up. We'll talk about that in a moment. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're listening to young voters across the United States about how they feel regarding their passion for voting in the midterms. And by the way, that NPR Marist poll that I had talked about earlier, it's not just young voters, but NPR went a step further and said young voters and Black Americans are the least likely to vote in the 2020 elections. And that's how we've been framing this hour to a certain degree. Well, to that end, we actually got a really interesting call from Connie Davis, who lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and she really takes issue with that framing entirely. And she says, we need to look at this in a very different way.
I've asked you before, you know, to stop using a negative hypothesis. When asking these questions, Black women came out in droves the last election, and we plan to do it again. We're encouraging our youth to do so. So maybe the question should be, what American citizens? I want you to replace Black with the word American citizens when you report. And maybe we can try to get out of this race thing altogether.
I hear you, Connie. Now, listen, when it comes to what actually happens regarding turnout on the days or the week of election, given all the different ways we can vote now, I can't really call it just election day anymore. But the point is that when it comes to actually casting ballots, we've seen over the past few elections that young people do show up. In fact, one nonpartisan group is trying to ensure that record numbers of young Americans show up in November.
We know that if young voters participate in two or more elections, that they are more likely to become lifelong voters. And so we're really focusing on ramping the next generation into our democracy.
Andrea Haley is CEO of Vote.org, and her group is investing $10 million to engage young voters ages 18 to 31. Since 2020, Vote.org has registered 380,000 new voters, and the group says it hopes to hit a million new registrations by Election Day.
We have an 81% conversion rate from registration to actually showing up at the ballot box, and we think we're going to see that again this year. What we've seen over the last few election cycles is that the youth vote has surprised us being general public, every single cycle now for the last two cycles.
Andrea says that Vote.org is working with social media companies to ensure accurate voting information is available on social platforms. She also says it's important to follow up with newly registered voters with reminders, information about how to vote, and encouragement to talk with friends about their voting plans.
I think many young people are connecting the issues they care about directly back with civic participation. I think we're seeing people connect the dots in real time. Noticeably, since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, we've seen organic spikes of young people on the site registering to vote, particularly young women registering to vote. And I do believe that people are passionate enough right now that we're going to see an increase in participation in a midterm year.
That's Andrea Haley, CEO of the nonpartisan group Vote.org. Now, I'm joined today by Fana Haile Selassie. She's 23 years old. Tennessee Buckman joins us as well. He's 33 years old. And Troy Simpson joins us. He's 30 years old. And Tennessee, let me ask you, did you vote in 2020?
I did not vote in 2020.
Okay, 2018?
I did vote in 2018.
Okay, so what? So then, in terms of your decision not to vote in 2020, what changed between 2018 and 2020?
In 2018, I would say it was my mother who actually encouraged me to get up and vote, and I really was in my mind thinking like, oh my gosh, another election, and here we go again. It's just this they versus them situation. And so my mother's like, just do it because, you know, you're an American citizen. You came to this country and you're now American citizen, came to this country. You should exercise your right to vote because that is part of being an American. And so that was the reason. But in 2020, it just looked very bleak and very sad. Honestly, I'm going to be honest. It was just not really a lot that I felt I wanted to invest my energy into. And if I was going to vote, I did vote locally, but I just did not care to vote like for the president, because mm-hmm. I just didn't feel like I just felt like it was more of a battle between two old men, and someone was just trying to get someone out. And that really, it just seemed very negative. But for me, on the point of just like voting in general, like I just think to myself, in so many different countries, like the voting day is a holiday. Why is it here that we can't take that time to actually, if it's an exercise to be an American, why is like, that not a holiday? Why do teachers have to like somehow find themselves, you know, leaving school at a certain time or trying to accommodate their right to vote when, you know, we have random holidays that, you know, people just don't even like look at? But if you're an American, should you not have the right to have a day off to actually exercise your right to vote?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Fana, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, the public education system and how voting is encouraged and established as and emphasized as a tool for us to use, and it's not really emphasized in our public schooling system. So we need to think broader in terms of engagement and engaging youth, and start at the educational level to encourage civic participation.
You know, Troy, there was something that Fana said earlier that I wanted to ask you about, because Fana, you had talked about local issues actually being very important to you and one of the main reasons why you try to educate yourself as much and talk to your friends as much as you can in order to cast votes that have an impact locally. Now, what we've done here, and, you know, I hold my hand up as being responsible for that because my mind tends to drift towards national level issues, those national level races. But that's all on the ballot, right? There's actually much more on every single ballot across the country, even in these midterms. And Troy, I was just looking at in Nebraska, there's going to be things on the ballot, issues on the ballot. For example, a question about authorizing local governments to spend revenues for commercial air travel service at local airports. There's also going to be a question about requiring ID to vote, and another one about increasing the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2026. If you don't vote, you're not going to have a say in those issues either that have a really direct impact on Nebraskans.
Well, let's see here. I don't work for minimum wage. I think that the market will support what the market will bear. I have an ID. I'm not opposed to having a ID card shown at the poll, frankly. I don't think it's a bad idea. You have to show ID for everything else. And as far as commercial air travel goes, I'm a pilot, so I'm all for it.
But if you don't vote, you can't even say you're affirmatively for it, right?
I suppose you could say that.
I mean, do you see why I'm at, why I'm asking here? Because, again, like, I hold myself responsible for framing this in terms of, like, who are you going to send to office? But those aren't the only issues that, that voters are asked to have a say on. And I just wonder, you know, if you can't make a change in Congress, you can at least make a change, and really palatable ones or tangible ones, I should say, at the local level. So is that not a motivation to, you know, you don't have to cross an X in for the Democrat or Republican, but you can make a choice for on local issues. Is that motivating to you, Troy?
Maybe.
Well, you know, we're getting a lot of comments here from listeners, both young and not so young. For example, Cell Mill on Twitter is saying, Meghna, please tell these young folks that if they think things can't get far worse than what they already think about in this country, they're very sadly mistaken. Rights can be totally banished if they don't vote. And Beth Pulaski says, entitled, selfish, and whiny. Me, me, me. Gross exaggeration. My 25-year-old, who Beth says she cherishes, says the same thing. I say if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Vote. It is life and death for many. Tennessee, what would you say to Beth?
I agree. I mean, I'm a registered voter. And with your previous statement, when it comes to other things on the ballot, I definitely feel that that's something that's never, that's, if that, if those other things were actually put into the foregrounds and a lot of younger voters understood that there's way more on, like, on the ballot than just voting for, you know, a figurehead, I think that would bring more people to vote. I think that's one of the reasons why I do exercise my voting rights, because I know that there's so much more, but I don't think a lot of the younger generations, my generation, like, knows that. Like, I think the when it came to the legalization of marijuana, I think everyone was on board with that, because that was something that was talked about for a very long time, like, and everyone's like, oh, this is on the ballot. This is on the ballot. We should all, we should vote this. But I feel like there's so much more that we should, there's so much more effort that needs to be made to let people know that this is, you're voting not just for a figurehead, you're voting just to, you know, for everything else, for your existence in your local state.
So, you know, first of all, I want to just reiterate my gratitude to all of you for coming on the show, because, you know, in the media and our programs, even like ours, we kind of tend to talk about people in abstraction, and that's not good, right? We need to make real the lives, views, and thoughtful opinions of as many Americans as possible. And the three of you are really helping do that today, and I can't thank you enough. And I want to advance, I want to put that first, because I'm just about to say, I don't know what other options you have. I've been holding back on this all hour. I just don't know. I don't understand, in the United States, hearing in 2022, the level of, I understand your frustration, but the level of sort of self-imposed powerlessness, because I almost feel like I'm hearing folks on this roundtable just taking our democracy for granted a little bit. Like, it is it's perplexing and a little bit frustrating. And if you're not going to vote, okay. But then, you know, it's not always the responsibility of the people putting even ballot measures on the ballot to come out and knock on your door specifically and say, hey, pay attention to this too. I mean, where do we have our, where do we call upon our own individual civic responsibilities as Americans to be a part of any political process, small or large, in this country? I'm just going to throw it out there. You guys take it.
Magna, you said if you're not going to vote, what are you going to do? And I would say you need to read, because based on some of the perspectives I'm hearing, they're not coming from an informed vantage point. ID laws have a history of disproportionately affecting low-income racial and ethnic minorities, the elderly, and people with disabilities. That's something you would know if we read and were well-informed. And now we don't have to just rely on newspapers like our grandparents every morning, who read the newspapers every morning. You have access to Twitter and other, even social media platforms that are utilized by news sources. So if you're not going to vote, at least read.
Mm. Troy or Tennessee, do you want to... Do you want to respond to what I just said?
Well, I can tell you. Go ahead, Tanisi.
Well, I would definitely say, Fauna, I agree with you. I definitely say when I was asked to be on this panel, I did do a lot of research. I'm like, you know what? Let me read a little bit more about my congressman and the primaries and see what they're saying and how and what they stand for, and I'm gonna be honest, I found out a lot more information than I usually do most election seasons, and I don't think there are a lot of our generations doing that. I also think that we do take our democracy for granted, and you know, it's almost becoming, you know, again, like that one lady said, that, you know, we sound entitled. We are just, we're majority brats because we are so self-absorbed into our own existence that we forget that the bigger picture is that this country was founded on, you know, by the people, for the people. And as much as it gets so, like, muddied, there's this clout chase that we're realizing is happening. And as we, as, you know, millennials, we are well aware of the power of clout. And so when we see someone trying to, you know, sway our vote, we just think that they just want it for likes and follows. Mm-hmm. But we have to really realize that there's more to it. And if we're not reading or finding deeper meaning behind what they're pitching, then we're lost. Yeah. And we are lost.
Troy, we've just got less than a minute, but you get the last word here today.
Well, I'll tell you, my apathy stems from my experiences in the service. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, it doesn't matter who's in office, you're still getting sent overseas and you're still getting shot at. Nothing changes except the color of the dude's tie.
Well, Troy Simpson, 30 years old and a veteran of the United States Navy, with us from Omaha, Nebraska. Troy, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome.
And Tennessee Buckman, 33 years old, from joining us from New Jersey, a makeup artist, and came to the United States at the age of 8 from Liberia. Tennessee, it's been a great pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Magda.
And Fauna Haile Selassie, 23 years old, joining us from Washington, a graduate student at Georgetown. Fauna, a great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Magda.
And I'm going to actually give the last word to Laughing River, who sent us this message over social media. Laughing River says, disenfranchisement is a feature, not a bug. Bipartisan identity politics is dividing the people and giving cover to leaders from enacting policy. We can be heard by voting all we want, but leaders need to listen. And the media does a poor job informing the public on details of policy because they, too, are chasing ratings. This is On Point.